so serious.
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game? Yeah!
Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah. All right, time for another Toy Department. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. How are you today, sir?
Excellent, actually. I'm drinking a green smoothie with spinach in it. Did I tell you about the Vitamix last week?
No.
A friend brought over a Vitamix, so we got this, like, you know, Jamba Juice level smoothie maker in the kitchen, and I've just been going smoothie crazy.
So it's funny because I asked for a blender for my birthday. That's how you know you're getting old, when you ask for things like a blender. And I got one of those, like, juicer. I don't know if it's a Vitamix. I think maybe it is, but, you know, it's a similar type device. I just wanted to blend stuff. I wanted to use it for cooking. Like, I hadn't necessarily wanted to get into the juicing thing, but now that I have this machine, maybe I will. I really have a hard time.
Is it a juicer or a blender?
It is a juicer. You know what I mean? Like, it's designed to, like, I think it will also chop up things if you wanted to, but it's designed to make the juice, right?
So, yeah, no, mine is like a super powered blender.
Yeah. Like, that's, I think that's what it is. It's like a super blender. So I just have a hard time wrapping my head around drinking spinach.
I mean, in this particular smoothie, it was my first attempt. It actually comes recommended by none other than Kareth Burke, our guest of a couple weeks ago. And now my like leftovers text message friend and smoothie recommender.
Well, she does work at Whole Foods sometimes, right? So
exactly. Yeah. I figure who better? So she gave me a recipe that is good that I have to adjust a little bit because I was not careful enough with proportions, and I tried to experiment in a way that I don't think was totally successful. So it's not the best, but I will say, as far as drinking spinach goes, it's not like this recipe is such that it doesn't taste like spinach, really. It tastes like, you know, mostly like berries. There's some berries and banana in it as well.
Okay, gotcha. All right. Well, I had a roommate once who made kombucha at home.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, so if you
kombucha start... Kombucha is disgusting.
Yeah, if you start getting into that, then we may have to stop. Just cut off all ties.
I accept that.
Okay.
I concur with your general position on kombucha, certainly.
All right, we should probably jump out of the weird health foods aisle because we've got stuff going on in the show today. We've got a guest on the program.
Yeah.
Like, nationally recognized guest. This is very exciting.
Yeah. One of, like, a very small number of nationally recognized people that I happen to know personally, so we can get them on. It's very exciting. Cassidy Hubberth is an ESPN host and reporter and general personality.
You know,
personality, yeah, I guess that's the way to put it.
Part of the future of ESPN.
I think she is, yeah. And also someone who knows a lot about the NBA and is fun to talk to. I think it was a really good interview. So you're all looking forward to that, I'm sure.
I don't know when we'll exhaust all the experts in Kolsky's cell phone, but until then, enjoy them on the program.
Exactly.
That'll be coming up later, but maybe we should get into homework and stuff before we do all that. The assignment this week.
Yes.
Was to watch I Love Dick.
I Love Dick.
Did you love I Love Dick? Was there Dick love for you this week?
Yeah, I think there. Well, it was there. No, yes, I really like it. I told you when we assigned this as homework that I love Catherine Hahn. I'm also, you know, not as much, but a low-key fan of both Kevin Bacon and Griffin Dunne, who I think are both really fun in this. And it's really just feels like it's like a I don't know if tour de force is the right word for the genre, but it's just, they just wound Catherine Hahn up and let her go.
Yeah.
I mean, she's a delight and she's everything in this show. And it's just her, like, it's almost this madcap version of her just running around having a personal life crisis, basically. And it's,
yeah, like, did you find Catherine Hahn a delight or the character? Because there were, you know, she's having a bit of a breakdown in some ways. It's not always the most pleasant thing to watch, right?
Well, it's pretty funny, though, for the most part, wouldn't you say? I mean, yeah, she's freaking out some, and it's weird. But it's pretty light.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I'm not saying, like, it was hard to watch or anything. Delight was not quite the word I would use, but she's great. She's really
I meant her.
Excellent.
Yeah, I meant her as an actress, not so much the character as a person, but I do think she it's like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of an appropriate metaphor where it's almost in a lot of ways, and at a lot of times in the show, it turns into this sort of one-woman show where it's just a great actress on a stage flailing about in a hilarious and, you know, I think also thoughtful way. And that, to me, is delightful.
Yeah, and I do think Kevin Bacon is kind of settling into the grizzled veteran thing. Have we talked about Kevin Costner? And like Richard
Gere.
Yeah,
well, this is a thing, yeah. Right? I mean, it's good actors of a certain age often settle into this sort of character role. There's not a ton of leading parts for people, you know, closer to 60 than 50, which I imagine Kevin Bacon must be, right?
Oh, that's really depressing to think about, but you're probably right. I'm gonna look that up.
58
while we're
years old, yeah. So I think when actors know themselves and are comfortable in their own skin, they can kind of settle into one of these, I don't want to say typecast, but even when you look at what great actors like Al Pacino or Robert De Niro started to do over 55-ish, it gets into you're either going to be a caricature of yourself or you're going to be a character actor.
Yeah. And I De Niro's think done Kevin, both of those paths, I think.
Some of them have done both. Yeah, yeah. No question. But Kevin Bacon is finding nice spots to look good, and he does look good.
Yep, I would agree with that. By the way, maybe we should do this for homework. I haven't seen it yet, but I've heard the De Niro Madoff movie on HBO is really good.
Yep, so I would be open to watching that.
Might want to check that out. Did you watch Transparent?
No, because that's the Jill Soloway.
Yeah, right? And I just, you know, I mean, they're definitely different shows, but tonally, to me, they're very similar, and I really think that if you like one, you'd like the other. So
yeah, I don't know why I haven't watched Transparent. It just hasn't. I haven't gotten around to it really, but I'm aware of the critical acclaim surrounding it and interested in it. Oh, speaking of, this is not speaking of anything. This is a complete non sequitur. Don't know what made me think of it, but Orange is the New Black comes back soon, and we should talk to Julie, speaking of people in my Rolodex.
See, we're just rolling through it. We're rolling through the Rolodex. Try to get
all right. That's
a
that's a hot tease for an episode in the next month. Julie Lake of Orange is the New Black.
Making note, get better Rolodex.
Yeah. And, okay. Hey, you leave Julie alone. What is that supposed to mean?
No, that was me. I need a better Rolodex because you're calling people.
Well, what's ironic about this is I'm fairly certain your Rolodex is more significant and interesting than mine. It's we'll see what happens.
Okay.
I'm giving you time, but I expect results.
You know, most interesting name in your phone book is kind of like it's a fun party game. We should play that sometime.
That for me, because of my work as a sports radio producer, that's a very different conversation for me than people I could get on this podcast.
All right, fair enough. Should we talk about
Leftovers? I got Rick Barry's number. He's not coming on.
No. I think I'd be scared to have Rick Barry on a podcast.
Well, he would berate us, but it would be good radio.
It's true. You guys don't know anything. Should we talk real quick about The Leftovers, which is heading into final episode this week?
Do we want to have a final thought on I Love Dick? I mean, I haven't finished it. I'm a few episodes in, but I do really like it. I really enjoy it, and I definitely plan to finish it.
I mean, my final word is, I definitely recommend checking it out. I think I'm three episodes in, so I'm towards the beginning. It's hard for me to say definitively, like, this is great television, but I'm really liking it, and
all right, we'll check back in.
It's worth it. I feel like a lot of people don't really know about that show, so
yeah, I don't feel like it's getting enough love for the quality of show that it seems to be to me.
Amazon doesn't seem to have quite that same sort of
word of mouth that
muscle.
Netflix.
Yeah, that
yeah,
Netflix.
It's interesting.
You know,
I'm sure it's probably relative to subscriber. Like, it's probably a direct relationship to subscriber count.
Yeah.
I'm sure Netflix has a huge subscriber advantage on
Amazon. But I don't know, man. Like, a lot of people have Amazon Prime. I just don't know that people go look for
like
it.
Like, regular video people who regularly use it for video, maybe.
Because, you know, if you get Amazon Prime, you get the video service.
Right. But I think a lot of people just use it for packages.
Right. They just want free shipping on their shoes
right,
or whatever.
Exactly.
So, all right. So, Leftovers. The penultimate episode, one of the more I think how you feel about this last episode depends on how you feel about what happens when Kevin dies, right? You know, like, do you enjoy those stories or no?
I see. Well, I did kind of. This one made me enjoy those stories less.
How so?
Well, it's starting to bother me. Like, where is he? Is it real?
Well, I mean,
like a woman just, and this is going to be spoilery, obviously. But the previous episode, a woman killed herself basically because she believes it's not real and the whole world's gone crazy, as far as I can tell. Right?
Right.
Even the love of her children, which is heartily reinforced at the moment of her suicide, is not enough to convince her to stick around. So, and now look, there could be a lot of there are a lot of things involved in that, undoubtedly. But clearly part of it is she's like, this is insane. Everyone I know is completely out of their minds and involved in this crazy imaginary religion with my ex-husband as a deity or saint of some kind. I got to get out of here. And he is convinced he's visiting an afterlife where real people exist, and actual souls have gone, and yet there really is nothing.
Is it an afterlife or more like a parallel universe?
A parallel universe, a purgatory, whatever you want to call it. It's another plane of existence where you go when you die, and other dead souls are there, and it's really them, and yet. Even his interaction with those souls, I don't believe there's ever any indication that they are real or have any relationship with the previous life those faces lived.
Yeah, well, it's back to the unreliable narrator thing, and that
right.
you don't really know how crazy Kevin is,
or
his father.
So there's this question of, is it just a schizophrenic death dream, or is he visiting some afterlife? And if he's not visiting some afterlife, how come he keeps living? How come, like, if there's not some sort of magic happening, why does this guy kill himself what we now imagine to be probably at least dozens, if not hundreds of times, right? With the bag in the bedroom. How could he possibly keep doing that? If there's not some sort of magic going on,
well,
and if the like at a certain point, I understand we're not going to get all the answers to everything, but at a certain level, I do ask the question: well, what the hell is the point of any of this?
Well, I do. Yeah, I mean, I think, look, clearly the show has set Kevin up as someone special. Like, everyone within treats him as such. It's not like everyone seems to have the ability to die and visit this plane and come back, right? So.
I don't think anyone else has done it, right?
Right. So it's, yeah, I mean, I think you have to say, yes, there's some sort of magic at play. And I do sort of, I don't think what that magic is one of the things that will get answered in the next episode. Like, it just doesn't really seem like that's where this is going.
Well, I get that, and I sort of accept that on its face, but I do wonder about the. I don't know if it's the right decision from a storytelling perspective. Like, I think the questions that deserve to be left unanswered are questions like, you know, okay, ultimately, where do you go when you die? Ultimately, what is the toll of disappearance versus death? You know, and exploring human relationships. There are certain unanswerable questions, but why one guy in the known universe can die and come back to life repeatedly seems like a pretty show-specific, like, narrative question that I feel like kind of should be answered.
Mm. Yes, and I don't know, maybe it's just kind of the way that I felt like I needed to approach Lindelof.
Well, right, that's the other side of it, is we know this guy, and we know he doesn't care about the things we care about.
Right, I'm not even asking questions. I'm just looking at this as, like, this is a story about how people confront death and loss. And I'm just sort of riding along with it.
How does this last episode really serve that? No one dies. They're playing again. This entire episode is them playing at this game of send him there so we can get this stuff. It's all the entire right. episode.
It's kind of about what people need on the other side. You know what I mean? And sort of what we're mentally willing to do. You know what I mean? For the people that we love. You know?
Okay, I guess. Like, he's doing it for his dad, you're saying?
He's doing it for his dad. Yeah, and I think he's doing it for himself in some ways, which is why, you know, he's kind of confronted with himself in the bunker.
And that's just all supposed to be, like, look at how people respond to grief still from like, I don't know. I get that side of it, and I enjoy that side of it, and that side of it is meaningful, and I'm in.
Yeah, look,
I'm
I mean,
not turning
I think
the show off.
I think the other people
episode.
In the bunker, it's not accidental who those people are. You know what I mean?
Well, no, I agree, but like, there's a level at which you're doing something thoughtful and creative and tied together, and then on the other sort of extreme, there is. Just like throwing a combination of Easter eggs and red herrings at the wall and not answering any of
it. Some of that.
And I prefer to be closer to the wrapped up side. And while I understand that that's not quite what Damon Lindelof does, and I'm fine with that, I've accepted that, I think we're getting a little close to the side of just like, I mean, if he doesn't go back to that world, then we have just a bazillion little Easter eggs and loose strings that are just seem so random to me that I wonder how much thought or planning is put into it.
I will say this. Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm on the record as I just don't think he's interested in directly answering certain questions that maybe are narrative driven that are obvious to people. But I also think, you know, given his experience with the ending of Lost and people's reaction to it and the post of that and the finite nature of the you know, building of this show, right? And understanding, like, okay, we're going to do a second season. We're going to do this 8-episode third season. This is the length of the runway we need to tell the story. Like, I think the end, like, the show has been hyper-focused to whatever this ending is going to be for a long time. And right. I just am guessing that he's going to be determined to stick it. The question will be, you know, what does sticking look like in his mind and how will we react to that, right?
Right. No, and I mean, I think that's the thing. There's not too much point in going too deep because a lot of this is, I mean, all of it. We're going to know his ending in a week when we talk about it. So you're right. He could stick it in a way that's completely satisfying to me, and I hope that he does.
Just one final thought. Can you imagine
that sentence was really weird?
No.
that I think that I'm confident or that I at least recognize the possibility that Damon Lindelof can stick it in a way that's yes. satisfying to me.
Well, speaking of stick it, this is kind of like, can you imagine being the Foley who had to like determine what sound the penis identity scanner was going to make?
Oh my God, I'm so glad you brought this up because I had forgotten. Okay. I'm just going to put it out there as I see it, so to speak. The noise they chose is hilariously absurd.
Yes, I agree.
to a degree that it must have been done on purpose.
It feels like it sounded like they dropped a burrito.
It sounds like someone dropped a loaf of bread onto something, and it's like and he did it twice. So there's no doubt in my mind that someone was like, "We need his dick to make the loudest sound anything has ever made being flopped onto something."
I could be wrong, but I feel like there have been some references to his girth in the show before.
Right? I don't remember that, but it's so. The first time it happened, I was like, "Did I just?" And I was like, "Whatever, who cares?"
They went
and
back.
When he did it again, I was like, "No, that is deliberate. I got to remember to talk about it on the podcast because it's so over the top, and to do it twice, it's just like it literally sounds like he dropped like a. You know, an entire like butcher set of sausage links onto
yes.
the scanner.
And look,
there's some weird choice. What a weird choice.
All right. And to bring it back in kind of like a final way though, to me, that is one of the reasons why I'm not as concerned with what does it all mean and where are we all going. Just because I like the ride so much, like the attention to detail, things we've talked about. I mean, the soundtrack choices.
That has never stopped.
Or, you know, the shot of him and Patty going out and watching the nukes launch,
right.
You know, as like shooting stars. Like, it's such a visually beautiful show, and I love the acting performances, and it's just I have fun spending time in that world, even when there are times when I don't fully understand what's happening. It's still fun. So yeah, I really do love the show, and I'm going to miss it when it's gone.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that's why, like, I don't mean to sell too much of a negative position here because the show's great, and it's so well done and well acted. That all those questions are pretty secondary.
Yeah, I would agree with that. We should probably hit the Hasan Minhaj special on Netflix because both of us managed to find some time to watch that. Hasan Minhaj, for those of you who are not familiar with him, is a Daily correspondent or Daily Show correspondent.
Yeah.
And pizza commercial veteran. And
as we learned,
and he's doing the latest Netflix stand-up special from lovely Davis, California. I was not aware he was a Northern California guy.
I only learned on a podcast recently. I forget who he was on with, maybe Bill Simmons. This special is, I thought, great. I don't know what you thought about it, but to me, it was fascinating in two ways, one of which I only explicitly noticed. Well, I shouldn't say that. I probably would have noticed anyway, but it was explicitly looking for it because I had heard this podcast before listening, watching the special. And that was the way it was shot. Did you notice that?
No.
Okay. So let's talk about the content first, because obviously you noticed the content. I think I had also seen Hasan Minhaj at a friend of mine in LA was doing a set at like a B room at the Comedy Store. And I went to see her, and it was leading up to the Congressional Correspondents' Dinner that he was hosting. And he was there working out material. So I had seen him do some funny election material live. He's smart. and thoughtful and really deeply funny. And I think he is a really like a stand up to watch as a young guy who is doing interesting things.
Interesting. You know, my take was that I liked it. It almost felt to me more like a one-man show than a stand-up routine.
I think I would agree with that, and I think the way it was shot plays into that.
And I do think he's interesting and smart and considered. I didn't think as a stand-up comedy special that this show was particularly funny.
First of all, you don't think it was funny?
I'm not saying I didn't laugh. I didn't think it was unfunny, but like I laughed a lot more watching comedy. Dave Chappelle or Amy Schumer, or you know what I mean, like
right.
And I do find him funny in other contexts. So you know, it's not like I don't think he's funny.
You're right though. This was a very one man show. It was It was storytelling in a broader way than the average stand up show. I totally agree with that. I found that to be really interesting and entertaining and I enjoyed the thoughtfulness of the way that was laid out. And this is where I think the way it was shot comes into play. It was shot, unlike most stand up specials, which are shot from, you know, a few stationary cameras, with a few different looks. There was a cameraman on stage doing like sweep ins, and there were a couple times the camera spun around him while he was looking out at the audience, and you saw the back of his head in the audience. And it was shot more like a film than a stand-up special, which I think plays into the whole, like there were some moments where he was delivering more, you know, considered serious lines of the piece, and it zoomed in on him with a tight shot of his face, you know?
Yeah.
Stuff that you don't see in normal stand-up specials that I think contributed to it feeling maybe less like a stand-up special and more like a one-man show is the perfect way of putting it, because it's sort of a telling of his life through stories that are alternately funny, sad, you know, heartbreaking, goofy. And I thought it was really – maybe the better way to look at it is as a one-man show, and I thought it was really well done from that perspective.
Yeah. I mean, I often thought, well, I'm getting some really interesting perspectives on things that you don't really get to hear – spoken about on television. Like there's like it felt good for me, but it felt more like that than it did tasty at times, you know. And I don't know, maybe that's
totally, it's a little much if you're sitting down. This is an expectation management thing, I think, where if you're sitting down to be like, all right, hour and 20 minutes of stand-up comedy, gonna laugh my ass off, this is maybe not the right thing. But if you're like, it's maybe more of like when you're in a documentary mood, this could be a wonderful surprise sort
yes,
of thing.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that exactly. I'm not downing it. It just, I think maybe I came in thinking I was going to get more jokes. You know what I mean?
Right. Looking for a different thing.
Yeah. All right. Should we jump into homework real quick?
Let's do that after Cassidy. Let's go to our interview.
Okay, yeah, because the NBA finals are coming up, and yeah, we figured that we'd actually get a real expert.
Yeah, someone who's like interviewed Greg Popovich between quarters and you know, worked with every ESPN commentator that exists on various studio shows, hosted NBA Tonight for a couple of years. Someone who really knows what's going on.
Yeah, so here's Cassidy Hubbard.
All right, so it is the collective pleasure of the toy department, I'm sure I can say, to welcome Cassidy Hubbard of ESPN fame, but known to me as a dear friend of my younger sister from way back in high school. And we are talking with you from Malibu, California. Am I to understand that?
Yes. Well, yes, from Malibu, California. What? Actually, it's my first time here.
Really? Are you like?
Yes. Are you staring out from a cliff right now, just kind of like looking out in the ocean lovingly?
No, I'm looking at some mountains right now.
That's
pretty
good.
I didn't get the ocean view,
okay.
But it's still very beautiful. Very beautiful.
Wonderful. All right, so let's get down to business and talk about the NBA Finals, which, as people are first able to hear this, will be tonight.
So
I mean,
let's just
we've been waiting.
Right. So we've thought about this a lot. We've had time. I guess the first question is, do you see this being a competitive series, or do you think the Warriors run away with it?
God, I hope so. I hope it's competitive. And yes, I mean, is that your Warriors bias coming? That
is it?
I mean, like,
yeah, I don't think those are the only two options.
That was a real leading question right there. Last time I checked, the Cavs are the defending champs, and LeBron James is peak LeBron James. So I would not be stunned if the Cavs win. However, last year I picked the Cavs. I think we had a conversation.
I think so.
Where I was saying that I picked the Cavs, you got all mad at me, and I think the Warriors. I don't know which game it was, but the Warriors were. It was definitely after Game One where the Warriors looked dominant. I still picked the Cavs.
I think it was two or three games in, actually, if I remember correctly, and I was really feeling my oats. But let me ask you this: I don't think we talked at the end of it. Do you think if Draymond Green doesn't get suspended, do the Cavs win that series?
You can't play that game.
No, but it's not because But here's the point: it's not about playing that game, Cass. Here's why I play that game. You're right, because it's not about whether or not
the year before be like, okay, if Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving didn't get hurt,
100%, 100%,
because LeBron James damn near won two games on his own.
You're right. You're absolutely right. The only reason I make that point, it's not about questioning the legitimacy of the championship at all. It's a completely legitimate championship. I'm bringing it up only to make the point that a series which they may very well have won last year without a suspension and some injuries, they now added Kevin Durant. So I don't think I didn't
yeah, but
mean
it's a
to
very
suggest.
Different team. Yes,
it is.
You added an MVP.
Yeah,
but
the real
is,
MVP.
This is not the same. No, that's his mom. Like this is not. This is. It's not the same team. These aren't the same teams.
No, they're not.
I actually agree with LeBron that they're. I think that they're both better.
Yes.
But
would you say maybe one is a little worse on defense than they were last time around, though?
That's correct. They're both supercharged on offense, but I do think the Cavs don't play the defense they did certainly 2 years ago, but even last year.
Yeah, no, there's definitely some concerns defensively. And we haven't really seen them tested.
That's the issue to me.
Because you know, they haven't really faced what was the number that I saw today from Havishos that, like, they haven't faced a top 25 offensive player by real plus minus yet this postseason, you know. And that's even with Isaiah and Kyle Lowry going down. So, and then the Warriors have, like, three top 25 offensive players.
Right.
In the starting lineup, but defense is to me energy. Defense is are you locked in? And I don't think the Cavs need any more motivation. I'm not trying to, you know, hop on the Cavs bandwagon. I'm not going to let you disrespect them phrasing the question that way. I mean, put some respect on the Cavs, okay?
This is
a defending champ. Okay. Jeez,
yeah. Okay. Kolsky. That's fair. That's fair.
You've been in the bay too long.
No, but the issue is not a level of respect for LeBron. Clearly, there is a respect issue. I think you're right about defense to a degree. Obviously, a huge part of it. We've seen it, perhaps nowhere better than in simply the play of James Harden. Right, where there's a huge part of defense that is just effort. When James Harden is putting in effort, he's a perfectly average defender. When he's not, he's one of the worst defenders in the league. But some people are capped at perfectly average. And the Cavs, when they have their scoring lineup in, have a handful of defenders that are capped at perfectly average. And I think that becomes a real problem for them. Because we've seen in this playoffs, against good defensive teams, they've been able to score. Which suggests that there are going to be times when the Cavs can score against the Warriors. But the question is, are there going to be times when the Warriors can't score against the Cavs? And I'm not sure there are.
I think a big concern is how much energy is LeBron going to have to exert guarding Kevin Durant. You know, I think it's just kind of funny that that's like we're all focused on the Durant LeBron matchup, and oh wait, we forgot about Steph and Kyrie matchup. I, you know, I mean, I get what you're saying. I just, you know, these are the finals, and we saw Kevin Love, you know, get some lockdown defense last year in the finals. No one thought that was possible. So anything is possible.
All right, I'm going to ask a homer question, and I'll preface this by saying I think this series is roughly 50-50 odds, and I don't see much chance of it happening. But hypothetically, if the Warriors were to sweep and truly pull off the on top of 67 wins and four All-Stars, could they possibly be laying a claim to the greatest team of all time? Like, is that actually at stake in this series?
Well, I mean, you could say the greatest playoff run of all time. Greatest team of all time? I don't know. I think it would have to...
You're talking to two Chicagoans now is the problem.
Well, but it's just like... Just also, it's like team to me, I feel like it have to run it back. If you're going to start saying like the greatest season of all time, I mean, we had the discussion all last year. I don't know. Of course, they're going to be in the conversation, but we got to see how, you know, 4-4-4 is if sweeping the NBA finals in itself is pretty yeah. amazing. So, I just don't think that's going to happen.
I don't either. But it's still on the table, which is amazing in itself.
Yeah. If it happens, it should be it's going to be talked about. And I wouldn't be yelling, put some respect on, you know, the 96 Bulls if that conversation came up. You know, if they did the 4-4-4, 67 wins. Like, yeah, that's absurd.
All right. So now that we're talking about the need to run it back, because I kind of agree with you on it. When we're talking greatest teams of all time, almost all of them won at least back to back, if not three in a row. Mm-hmm. But two out of three ain't bad, but back to back to make it three out of four would be a different level. And moreover, obviously, they could stack them. The question is, let's just say for the sake of argument that the Warriors win this series, at least in convincing fashion, if not in a sweep. Mm-hmm. At some point, it didn't happen this year, it might not happen next year, but at some point LeBron is going to decline somewhat. Who's next? Is there another team in the NBA? I mean, how much can Boston do? Like, what other teams do you even see as a potential challenger to the Warriors anywhere as we move forward?
The Cavs, because LeBron's going to, if once he starts declining, he's going to find some more people to play with him.
That's like probably true.
You know? And LeBron, you know, like there's been so many discussions lately about, you know, like, I don't want to have this discussion, just to preface this, the Jordan LeBron comparison. But, you know, LeBron doesn't need to be a scorer to be a playmaker. I mean, to have an impact on the game. So he'll find other ways.
I'm with you. I think LeBron can play till he's 40 and just be playing out of the post and throwing it around the court as a distributor. I think that guy will be effective late into his career. I'm just not sure. They're locked into this trio. And I'm not sure this trio gets any better than it is right now.
Oh, Kyrie's going to get better.
You think?
Yeah.
All right.
Kyrie's going to get better. Have you not been impressed with what Kyrie's been doing in the playoffs? Sure. He didn't have like the greatest regular season. That's why he didn't make an all NBA team, but the guards were insane this year.
I think Kyrie has a ton of talent. I think he's very capable. I think he can be as electric as anyone. He's very flashy. I think ultimately he's had some huge moments, but he's been pretty inconsistent as this regular season showed. So, yeah.
Yeah, consistent when needed.
He's been really good in playoff moments. There's no question. I'm not hating on Kyrie. I'm just not sure I'm not sure this version of the Cavs gets much better than it is, and I think the Warriors are better than they are. So I wonder what the next move is. Because
yeah, they are more talented. They are more talented. They have more talent than the Cavs.
And even if it is the Cavs, does that mean, you know, the trilogy becomes a best of five, becomes a best of seven? I mean, if the Warriors keep those four guys together, which they seem to have every intention and capability of doing, who else is there? I guess the Celtics can get better, right? But the question is how much better? How long are we stuck with the, at least, I don't mind it, but at least the potential whine of, well, the NBA is just two teams?
I don't know. I mean, look, there's the rumors of maybe adding the Celtics, you know, getting Paul George, getting Jimmy Butler. Like,
if you were the Bulls, would you make that trade? Jimmy Butler for the number one overall pick?
No, because why would you trade away a certain for an uncertain?
Yeah, I tend to agree.
You have nothing else.
Right.
But Jimmy Butler.
Team. He's the team.
And maybe he's not a superstar, but he's a star.
He's awful close to superstar.
Figure something out. Don't just, you know, give away all of your pieces. For what? Markelle Fultz? Like,
yeah, I don't know.
Sure, he's a nice player, but you have no idea.
Yep.
We have no idea. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how to answer that question. I don't know how to be a cop out, but we don't know who's going to be the next to step up. We've been talking about, you know, Carl Anthony Towns and Anthony Davis being the next MVPs in the making, but
it's still LeBron and Durant and Steph and Kawhi, yeah, and the same guy. Yeah. Well, Russell Westbrook's probably going to win it this year, so that's a slightly younger guy.
Right, and you know, I think he's going to stay in Oklahoma City,
which means he's not really going to be relevant to winning.
Correct, because no one's going to go to Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
So, but you know, I don't think it's a bad thing, though. Like,
no.
Why, you know, when no one was, I wasn't alive back then, but like when it was Celtics Lakers, like everyone's goes back to, that was the golden age of basketball.
Well, and moreover,
why can't we just be?
We don't lose the experience of getting to watch Russell Westbrook and James Harden all year just because we don't expect them to compete for a title.
Don't you recall everyone saying this is going to be the worst regular season you know, ever, because we know he's going to go in the finals? I think this was one of the best regular seasons that I've experienced covering the NBA because of the star power.
Yeah.
So this is you can look at it this way, that – sure, okay, we know who's at the tippy top, but the depth of just talent across the league is undeniable. Mm-hmm. There are more than, you know, three players who are appointment viewing. And sure, they may not win the championship in the next couple of years, but it's going to be fun to see them, you know, try.
Yeah, yep. Certainly guys like Westbrook, it's fun to see him try.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or how about the Greek Freak? You know what I mean? Like, there's, you know, you look, we kind of didn't talk about
the special
potential challengers in the East. Yeah. And like any one of these teams, you know, you look at the Warriors, they're largely built on late round picks, second round picks, mid first round picks. You know, one of these good teams could, you know, luck into a good player late in the draft and, you know, blow up in a way that we don't expect. So, I wouldn't write off the whole rest of the league.
No,
just yet. And if we get two more of these Warriors Cavs series, no one is going to be upset about it.
No one, exactly. No, the Bucks are going to be real fun to watch these next couple of years, because Giannis and Malcolm Brogdon, like, they got a lot of young talent, and Jason Kidd has that team.
They need a point guard. If they could get Kyle Lowry or Chris Paul to come there, they would really be in business.
Yeah, and then you got like, speaking of Kyle Lowry, you got the 76ers too, finally getting healthy again.
Hopefully, fingers crossed. Fingers crossed for the process.
And then getting another pick. So, Yeah, fingers crossed for Joel, man, because he's just too much gold for him not to be healthy. Like, just personality wise.
Oh, he's the best.
He really is awesome.
I'm all in on the redemption of Sam Hinkie. I think
yeah, this
just get better, and he starts strutting around going, "See, you just should have waited."
Yeah. I think he's already been doing that.
Yeah, I think so too. I've seen him at Oracle a couple times, actually.
No, that dude's going to get another job.
Yeah. All right, so speaking of jobs, let's talk about yours a little bit. I know this year was the first year you got to do NBA sidelines, yeah?
Well, I got my first opportunity last year,
okay.
Actually, Christmas Day.
Oh, that's right. I remember that.
Yes, I interviewed Pop.
So that's the first question, really. Is that as scary as it looks?
Look, I mean, you kind of know that he's going to
be a dick about
disrespect
it.
You.
Right? Yeah.
Like I wish I could have put it better, but he's, you know, he has a personal vendetta against those interviews, not right. necessarily us. But he doesn't want to do them, and I think that's quite apparent. And yeah, you know, it's really like I'm still a rookie here, but I, you know, I've talked to a lot of people who aren't rookies, and it's not an easy. It's a really a hard job to do well, because first of all, no coaches, like outside of Pop, want
no one's
to do
excited.
That.
Yeah,
no one's excited to do these interviews, and really, unless there's something specific you can get into, like an injury, or you know, if he put an odd lineup out there, like there's no real like great questions to ask in those first, specifically after the first quarter. Yeah. And third quarter interviews. So, it's already hard to try to come up with informative and just insightful questions. So then when you're going up against a situation where you know the coach doesn't want to be there, it also, you know, you also start to get a little anxious because you want to just get them back into their huddle. So it's about managing, making sure you're asking smart questions that they will appreciate answering, and then delivering it in a clear and concise way so you know they don't get annoyed.
Do you ever think
about,
with
these coaches all the time?
Do you ever think about going like totally off book with Popovich and like asking him for a wine recommendation or something?
You know how many people have said that to me?
They have. Okay.
You know, my first time that I did it, I had like a shtick was because it was Christmas, and I said, because it's Christmas, you know,
that.
Because it's the holidays, I, you know, give you a gift. I'm not going to ask you a second question. That was really a gift for me because I didn't really want to ask him a second question because he gave me a one word answer, which it was actually answered my question. I asked him, what did he want? Because what do you want to, did he want to improve on, you know, from the first quarter performance? And he said, pick and roll defense, which is, you know, okay, there's an answer. And then I was like, no, okay, not going to ask another question, but can't do that every time. And really, you know, you could go that route, but it could blow up in your face.
Yes, it could. It
because
sure
could. You don't know what mood he's in.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, they'd have to be up. If they're up like 10, you know,
yeah,
then maybe
yeah.
you go with the wine question.
Not even that, though. Okay? He could be mad at Pau Gasol, you know, you never know.
It's true.
Yeah. But no, I'm in no way complaining about the situation. I mean, everybody's jobs has, you know, challenging tasks. Like, it's good. I mean, he's. I would prefer if he were a little more cooperative, but he certainly pushes me to be better at my job.
Do you have NBA sideline reporters that you look at as you know, as influences or role models? Like, who in your mind is the best in the game right now?
Doris Burke.
Yeah.
AKA the GOAT. AKA she is even cooler than you think she is. She is the best. I fortunately had an opportunity to work with her during the playoffs. So it was I had a team of it was me, Ryan Rucco on play by play, and Doris was actually our color analyst, and I was a sideline reporter. So
I think Doris to me is like a female Hubie Brown as a color analyst, and I wish she got to do it more. Excellent.
She's excellent.
She breaks down the game into parts in a way that so few color analysts are capable of doing. Like, I would rather have her on the many of these ESPN and TNT games, to be perfectly frank, as the color analyst.
I mean, she is just, and she's been calling games for years.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, sure, she's recently gone on the NBA, but it's not like she hasn't been around the NBA as a reporter for I don't even know how many years. But before that, I mean, but she also calls women's basketball,
yeah,
men's basketball, like the WNBA and the NBA. No other commentator does that, and sideline reporter. Like, no one wears all of those hats. So she certainly is an inspiration, and I'm very fortunate I can call her a friend too.
Do you want to do play by player analysis ever?
So I don't know. I may have an opportunity to do it during summer league, but I'm still learning the reporting ropes, because you know, like the majority of my career, I've been in studio. So I'm, you know, let me just focus on, and I feel very, very comfortable in studio. So okay, I've quote unquote mastered being a studio host. Now I'm working on being a reporter. I can't even see the time where I can move on from, you know, feeling like I'm comfortable reporting and trying to do color commentary, because right now my answer would be no.
Yeah.
But you never know how, you know, if I'm fortunate enough to have a career that would evolve in that way.
Now, you've done some work early in your career on college football, and
I still do college football.
Oh, great. Yeah, so you're still doing college football. Can you please explain to my partner here why college football is awesome and he should be watching it, and what is he doing with his life on Saturdays?
Well, I mean, he went to Pomona, so...
You guys can you can both go to hell.
No, I'm not saying Pomona. Like, look, you could, you know...
I could have made money doing something much different than what I did. Yes, you're right.
I didn't say that. I, you know, you're a lot smarter than I am. Let's just put it that way.
Whatever.
So he didn't have that connection to college football. So I understand. Like, here's the thing: I didn't have a connection to college football until I started working in college football. I, of course. That is no disrespect to Northwestern.
Yes, it was.
There's a backstory to it. As you know, Kolsky, I grew up in Evanston, where Northwestern is. I lived at home with my parents my sophomore year. And then I lived like a block away from home. I still had friends. You know, I didn't really like socialize too much with the student body. So my connection to Northwestern, you know, it was just a little bit different than a typical college experience. So it wasn't, so I just like wasn't going to games as much as, you know, I probably should have as a fan. I worked the games, you know, to try to beef up my resume and get some more experience in sports broadcasting. It wasn't until my first big break out of school, where I worked at Fox Sports South in Atlanta covering the SEC. I worked on a show called SEC Gridiron Live, and I would go to a different SEC campus every weekend and interact with like student body, watch games, it was from there and seeing that environment. It was pretty, that's where I fell in love with college football. It was really the majority of my early career was covering college football. So as I was, you know, gaining more and more experience as a broadcaster, my experience was college football. So I just developed this passion for it because it was, you know, earning me a living. So it actually, I've been working on college football ever since I've came out of school in 2007. So there's not been a year where I haven't done college football. And so it's just, I love it. I love it because, but I think I fell in love with it in a different way. Maybe you should, you know, start doing some college football stuff. Matt, maybe?
Like go to games or what? Because
cover games, you know, you could do play-by-play for college. It's just, it is fun. College football Saturday, there's nothing like it.
See, but it's all environment. Like, everything you guys pitch is environment. And, like, I just want to watch the better athletes do the better thing.
What do you do on Saturdays, then?
Take a hike.
Okay. All right.
Read a book, you know?
His Instagrams on Saturdays are just, they're tough.
Instagram's lit. No, you know, the walk the dog through the marina.
That's fine. You know what? Have your you time.
Yeah, see, yeah. This did not go as Derek wanted it to go. But
I'm sorry, Derek. Derek, you don't want people who aren't passionate about it.
That's
you know?
True. That's true.
Like a college football fan, it's a you got to have a passion.
Yeah, I'm just going to water down the pool. You don't want that.
Yeah, no. But I don't understand, like, you do... Like, there is some excitement when you watch college football.
Yeah,
it's still football.
You know, it's kind of how I feel about, like, cartoons a lot of the time. Like, South Park.
Yeah, like, this is another thing.
When I watch South Park, like, it's funny. I like it. It's a good time. But I never sit down and watch South Park.
Oh, okay. I don't like cartoons that are, like, mean.
That are mean. You like cartoons that are friendly.
Yeah, I like kids' cartoons. Like, I don't like adult cartoons. I don't like cartoons that are mean and bad. And like, I don't know. I just
where does
I
the Simpsons fall on that?
I'm not a big Simpsons fan. And don't get in my mentions. We all have our things. I don't like it. I'm not saying because you like it, you are a terrible person. I'm saying I don't like it. So.
Sounds like you're scarred about this. It seems like this has been a problem somewhere in the past.
No, I just know thy social media. Okay?
Yep, you're gonna get at it. should we slide into some more things that may get you in trouble on Twitter and do the toy test?
Sure.
Oh yeah. Okay. So okay, all right. So you're this is very exciting for you. this is the first time we've ever done this, but as we start to theoretically have more guests, we wanted to come up with like a little like series of questions that we're going to ask everybody, and you may or may not have like a particularly good answer, but many of them are you know, essentially A or B answers, and I think you'll be able to handle it.
I feel like if I'm being honest, we mostly devise this to help people settle all the arguments that Kolsky and I have all the time.
So that's accurate.
No pressure or anything.
That's accurate.
I feel like that's already happened.
Yes.
I feel like that's what this whole podcast has been.
Yeah. Well, college football or not was one of the potential questions that got bumped, so we decided to ask you separately. So
given that it's like a huge part of my role now, yes, definitely college football. And you better watch primetime on ABC.
Naturally. Matt. Of course. Okay. Always. All right. So here we go. So we're calling it the toy test for now.
Okay.
First time ever. All right. So first question is, and this is, you know, a relative one, but what is the best movie that we have not seen? And obviously there's some guesswork to be done here, but
yeah, I'm like,
but what's your favorite movie that you think we might not have seen?
That you guys have not seen. Mm-hmm. Here's a problem though. I know, Matt, I know your viewing is like eclectic.
Well, you probably gotta go like old school or weird. You know what I mean? That's what I'm
thinking. Like I would say like,
or cartoon, obviously.
The first thing that came to mind was Pitch Perfect, but I feel like you've definitely seen that.
We have. Matt. That's not a bad answer, but we have seen Pitch Perfect. I'm sure you've seen that, right, Derek?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, a movie that you guys... This is a really flawed question, by the way.
I know.
Oh my God, it's just me guessing. It's not an... I'm not giving you an answer. It's just me guessing what you guys have, would have seen or not.
That's exactly right. That's sort of the point.
Okay. I don't even know what I... what do I even think about right now? Okay. How, have you seen 25th Hour?
That's Spike Lee.
Yes.
With Edward Norton.
Yeah, it's okay.
No, this is perfect. That's exactly the sort of answer we're looking for. Because that's a movie
I know,
we certainly
work.
Exactly. It's
feel
really
like two good movie choices there.
Yeah.
Well, and now they're movies that we might decide to talk about in the future because we hadn't yet talked about them on the podcast. That's sort of the point of that question, is you're helping us devise future topics.
Okay.
This whole test is for us, to be clear.
Okay.
Second question. This one's much easier. The Bachelor or Bachelorette, yes or no?
The whole Bachelor franchise, really. Are you in or are you out?
I can't answer this question.
Okay.
All right. I know the
answer to that, then. Okay. No, I understand.
Wait, I'll give you the answer. That. Well.
All right. We're gonna let you pass on the Bachelor question for.
Sorry.
For obvious reasons, which is fair. And now number three, which you may not have a strong opinion, but we're going to need you to choose. The band Phish. Good band or bad band?
Matt, I can't answer this question because I know you live and die by Phish. Like, if you could travel with them and they paid you in food, you would.
That is correct. If anyone from the band Phish is listening, if you pay me in food, I will travel and work for the band. I am wearing a Phish shirt.
I'm pretty sure that's how they pay the roadies, actually. Like, grilled cheese sandwiches, right?
See, now... Unfortunately, I'm afraid that we have no choice but to interpret your answer as bad band.
Go on. I think you gave me an out, so keep going.
I gave you an out. Question four. This one, I'm interested in your answer, although I don't think you'll be bound by anything for this. Golf, sport, or leisure activity?
Not really.
Sport. It's a sport, man. Don't. It's,
yes.
Don't do golf like that.
That's right. That's you're absolutely right. Good answer. And number five is...
I mean, it's a sport I would never play. I'm terrible at it.
No.
I would not want my husband to play.
Just let it stand.
I don't want to be
stop,
a golf winner.
Stop ruining
okay.
it.
Right.
Just let
but
it...
I mean, it's a dumb sport. Let's be real. Like, it's a dumb sport.
It's not a dumb sport.
It takes skill. It's the bachelor franchise of sports.
Okay, moving on. Question number five. What is the this is a good one, especially for you. And we'll take either or both. But your best or favorite live event, so like sporting event or concert, or both.
Sporting event. I don't like concerts.
I'm saying give me your
controversial
best.
Controversial stance right there.
Give me your best ever.
Oh, my best ever?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, best sporting event?
Yeah, that you've been to.
That I've been to? Yep. Or, well,
Or even just your favorite experience from a live sporting event. Like, give us a favorite.
Well, I would say, and maybe this is just like, what have you done for me lately? Like just being so present. But the standout moment for me in a live sporting event was when I did sidelines during Russell Westbrook tying Oscar Robertson for most triple doubles in the season. I was able to interview him after the game. And that was like one of those moments where I was like, oh, wow, like I'm part of this incredible moment. And I have a responsibility to try to, you know, heighten the experience for the fan. And that to me was like, oh, this is what the sideline reporting job's all about. Like, this is pretty cool. And it's not an experience I could ever get in the studio. So that may not be as exciting as what you wanted to hear, but that to me is what sticks out when you ask that question. As far as a concert is concerned, speaking of fish, I went to like a billion Dave Matthews Band concerts when I was younger, but that was more.
Speaking of fish, but go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's exactly the exact same thing. the same crowd. But like, I liked them when I was younger, but I was more just because like I followed my brother around.
Mitch?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yes, and Mitch went to a billion.
That's funny. I didn't know Mitch was a big Dave Matthews Band fan.
Huge, the biggest. I would say that stands out to me, but I think one of the best recent concerts I've been to would be a tie between Bruno Mars and the Watch the Throne concert with Jay-Z and Kanye.
I like that answer. I like the Watch the Throne answer. All right, last question of the toy
fest. Or go see Bruno Mars. Bruno Mars is the best.
I like the Fish and Dave Matthews is the same thing answer. That was the point of that.
All right. Last question of the toy test is, can you think offhand of a better name for this segment than the toy test?
Yeah, because it sounds like you're meaning to say toy chest. And it just sounds like a little kid is saying toy test. So you're gonna have to change that.
Yeah.
But the name of the podcast is
The Toy Department.
So
we could do something with department, like departmental.
No, wait. Instructions? Something about there's like a saying with toys, like a. I don't know.
This is kind of how our pre-show meeting went, actually.
That's exactly right.
I just went through this toy test, and I still don't understand what it is.
Yeah, it's a series of ways for you to help us for future podcasts. It's nothing more than that.
I think five confusing questions would be a great game for it.
Ooh, actually.
How about batteries not included? Ooh. What?
Ooh, I like batteries not included.
And so that's like basically you're helping power our podcast.
Yes.
So Gary's not included.
I love it. Okay, that's
a
great answer.
You guys, this is why they pay me the big bucks.
That's exactly
I'm not only your guest, but I'm producing your damn podcast for you.
That's right.
Oh, wonderful. All right, well, listen, Cass, we've already taken up almost an hour of your time, so I think we'll call it, but... It's much appreciated. That was an excellent time.
It was, as always. And make sure to put some respect in the Cavs' name, Koloski.
We'll do. And thanks for putting your mentions on the line for us. We appreciate it.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what? That's a true sign of, you know,
something.
Friendship or something.
Yeah. Something like that. Our friend or something, Cassidy Hubbard. Thank you again.
Thanks, guys.
Oh, that was fantastic. Look at you and your Rolodex coming through.
Yeah, right. It's true. It's almost out, but Cassidy is probably my number one go-to. She's funny and smart and cool and really knows what's going on.
Yeah, she could stand to agree with me more, but other than that, I'm right there with you.
We have a deep bond of Evanstonian love that you'll never be able to transgress.
Clearly. All right. While we're here and talking about the NBA finals, should we throw out predictions?
Yeah. Warriors in five.
Wow. Bold.
Is it? I think a sweep would be bold, but I couldn't pull the trigger on that.
I can't see Cleveland.
Cassidy told me to respect the Cavs, but look,
Yeah, you need put some respect on their name.
It's not that. It's not that I don't respect them. It's all relative. If we were having any other series with any other team, with 99% of the teams of all time, the Cavs would be getting more than enough respect from me. It's just I really think the Warriors are that good. I think it's a matter of two excellent offenses and one excellent defense. That's it. And then it's as simple as that to me.
Is it a 2-2-1-1-1 format?
Yes.
All right. So in your scenario, then
Warriors win at home.
Right. So the Warriors win three games at home, and the Cavs win one in Cleveland. I'm guessing.
Yeah, but honestly, I wouldn't even be shocked if the Cavs won one of the first two and the Warriors swept Cleveland. Like, I don't think home court matters that much in this series.
I just wouldn't
be shocked if it went to six. But
yeah,
my pick is Warriors in five.
I'm going Warriors in six. I just don't see LeBron coming out of there with less than two games.
That's fair. I mean, that's why I can't pick a sweep, because I can't imagine LeBron getting swept. So that's really the question. How much credit do you give LeBron, and how much belief do you have that the Cavaliers can find something on defense to at least slow the Warriors down?
Yeah, and I think they're going to find a few defensive answers. I mean, we heard a lot of talk about how Cleveland has been willing to implement things in the playoffs defensively that that they haven't done during the regular season. And I think they're going to have some tricks. And we've already seen that, you know, guys like Kyrie and Love defend their best. You know, they don't play a ton of defense, but the defense they do play isn't, you know, tends to be during the finals. So,
and there's the question of, you know, if Kyrie and Kevin Love keep playing their best on offense, that's, you know, they can take a game or two without playing great defense. It's just, I don't think they can win a series that way.
Yeah, no, that's right. I don't either. That's why I'm picking the Warriors. But I do. Yep. I just don't see the Warriors steamrolling them. So.
All right. Well, we're going to find out at least a little bit very, very soon, my friend.
Indeed. Is Wonder Woman out this week? I feel like maybe we should go check out Wonder Woman.
Yes. I'm so glad you said so. I'm definitely into Wonder Woman.
I am not, as you can probably guess. But the reviews have been really good, and I feel like I need to, you know, people are going to be talking about this movie. And I still think
you should see Logan. You should, like, prime yourself for Wonder Woman by watching Logan at your leisure at home.
Is that is around and available now, right? I think so, yeah. All right, I'll check out Logan.
It's probably on demand somewhere, or at least for a couple of bucks, rentable.
And this is going to be an origin story, right? Not Logan, Wonder Woman.
Somewhat. Yeah.
Man.
But it's, I don't know. I don't know how to defend it, but if... If screenings full of women are going to see it, you can suck it up.
I can manage. I just, you know, I'm going to be contributing to the comic book industrial complex that is clearly taking over the world.
Well, the good news about that is you don't have to feel like your $15 actually make any difference in the grand scheme of things.
that's fair enough. Fair enough. And also, I wind up eating a large popcorn and a large soda every time I go to the movies now, so it's not.
You know what I like to recommend? Just take a can of like some nice low-cal seltzer in your pocket, and drink that instead of a large soda. And I would go, if I were you, which is really just telling you what I like to order, I would go with a small popcorn and a Raisinets, and then you'd just like give yourself a mouthful of chocolate and raisins and popcorn all at once.
That all makes sense. And maybe this is just a window into my personality, that like once you order the small popcorn,
it's like 50 cents more for the large. Yeah, no, I get that.
Yeah, like literally the theater I go to, they priced it so that it's like it's $10 for the large popcorn and large drink with free refills, and it's actually more to order a medium popcorn and a medium drink.
Yep.
So
no, I know.
I'm just, once that happens, I'm done.
Give me the double large,
and I'm in. And maybe once or twice I've gone back for refills. I'm one person.
So Wonder Woman does come out this week. It officially Friday, although, you know, Thursday screening, so we should be able to figure it out.
Yeah, and I say let's not bite off more than that, because I know I'm going to be watching a lot of basketball these next 7 days.
Well, I'm actually going to insist that you watch something that you and I talked about during the week, but on the pod.
Yeah, I'll get to that too, which is War Machine.
War Machine on Netflix, which I did watch already and I won't talk about, except to say that I think it's actually kind of a big deal, in as much as it's a Brad Pitt, film for nearly $100 million, I believe, that is on Netflix.
Is it World War II? Is that the war in question?
Not at all. No.
Grant.
This is basically a satire of General Stanley McChrystal.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
All right.
And it's a different name. His name is Glenn McMahon. But it's almost point by point. They say it's like loosely based and it's an amalgam of generals, but it's pretty direct in my view.
All right, I perked up for that. I'm a little more excited now. All right, let's
straight down to the Rolling Stone article. It's pretty straight up.
So there you go. War Machine and Wonder Woman. Those are your assignments for the week. Enjoy the games. Enjoy the Champions League final if you're into that sort of thing.
Yeah, sure.
Are you gonna watch that? No,
I'll try. My parents are visiting me this weekend, so it could be tough.
It's gonna be like 11 a.m. on Fox. You know,
I'm gonna try.
It's the biggest soccer game of the year for you know. You might as well watch if you're gonna watch one, watch Champions League final.
I want to do that.
All right, and I think on that note, we should get the hell out of here.
Bye.
Thanks, Cassidy.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The lights out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.